Okay, please, the court.
Sure.
My name is Phil Gephardt, and I'm here today representing the appellant Avery Contracting, LLC, in this matter. The standard for judicial review in this matter required the presentation of a number of points on appeal. It's not my intent to try to address all of those points in my argument, and I would like to submit on the briefs any points that aren't addressed in my main argument or in the reply argument. I would like to focus on the three points in the application for transfer, or the three questions. And the first of those is what is denominated as point one in the appellant's substitute brief. It presents to the court the question of whether an owner of land that has been encumbered by a state highway easement, where that state highway easement is for a limited access highway, where all rights, abutters' rights of direct access to that state highway have been abrogated, whether that owner can bring an action for a way of necessity under section 228.342 of the revised statutes in Missouri. The critical element that's addressed in that statute is it requires that there be no access, and those are two words, that's the two operative words, that there be no access from the land for which access is being petitioned for and a public road. So the petition in this case alleges that there is no legally enforceable right of access from the 50 acres, more or less, to a public road. However, there's a conundrum here in that my client's land, the northern portion of my client's land, is encumbered with a state highway for which there has been limited access or no access from the 50 acres to that highway. If you look at the plain language of section 228.342 and those two words, no access, it would appear that this would be a fairly easy question to answer because my client has no legally enforceable right of access from the 50 acres to a public road. The problem is that the prior statute, section 228.340, had a different language and a different requirement. It had a requirement that the party seeking access show that no public road went through or alongside the property for which access is being sought. Now that language in 228.340 was repealed in 1991. However, we kind of have a what I call a bleed-through problem in that the courts of appeals that have enumerated the elements for a cause of action under 228.342, they continued over the same elements that were stated in the prior statute, 228.340, that was repealed in 1991. So the courts of appeals, all three courts of appeal, districts of the court of appeals, state that there's a requirement that showing that there is no public road through or alongside the property for which access is being sought.
A showing or a pleading?
It's in the statute, Your Honor, so I would assume that it would be both, that we'd have to plead and prove that there would be no public road through or alongside the property, the 50 acres for which access is being sought.
But you're saying that was the rule before 91, but not since 91?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that language comes from a time before there were limited access highways. The right to a right of the State Highway Commission to create limited access highways arose in 1945 with the amendment of the Missouri Constitution. It's in Article 4, Section 29. And so it's, I guess in real estate terms, it's a relatively new phenomenon. And I would think that this language change would accommodate the situation where there's been an abrogation of the abutters' rights of direct access. The case law in Missouri, the courts of appeals, equate the language of the old statute with the language of the new statute. And in this case, they're not equivalent. because of the existence of the limited access highway provisions in the Missouri Constitution and the abrogation of the abutters' rights of direct access to relocated Highway M. And
just so I have the right picture of this, I know the Highway M is on one side of the land. Is the all the rest of it is surrounded by this neighborhood, or is there something else on some side of it?
Your Honor, I could verbally describe it in this manner. Along the northern border of my client's property, in fact encumbering it as an easement, is relocated Highway M. And the relocated Highway M goes east and west. Parallel with relocated Highway M is old Highway M, which goes east and west also. And old Highway M runs along a creek bed, which is the low point of the watershed. My client's property is at the top of the hill, and that hill, there was a slice of it taken out for relocated Highway M. So there's actually an outcropping of many feet. To the west of the subject property lies the Creekstone subdivision, and Creekstone subdivision is sandwiched between the 50 acres and Moss Hollow Road, which is a county road. That's the road we're trying to get access
to. And what's to the east?
To the east of the subject property are a number of subdivisions, the largest of which is called the Parkton subdivision, which has several hundred lots in it. And the access to Parkton is on a road called Catlin Road, which is east of the property about a mile or two of the subject property. To the south of the subject property is another parcel that is itself landlocked. And I've been in discussions with Stan Schneer, who represents the owner of that property. That's been in litigation for a number of years, and he had already started his access case before we started this one.
Thank you.
He's trying to go east through Parkton. It's my position with respect to point one that when the legislature changes the language of a statute, it's presumed to be a substantive change in the law. And there's been no showing as to why the legislature would change the language of the statute, which would allow my client's claim without intending to change the law in this case. The second point I would like to address, Your Honor, is point five of the brief. It deals with whether or not the State Highway and Transportation Commission land, other than a road, can be subject to a private right-of-way. This arises because the State Highway Commission owns all of Lot 2 of Creekstone Subdivision, over which Creekstone Drive lays, and it owns Lot 3 except that portion upon which Creekstone Drive lies. It is my analysis starts with 228.341, which is legislation that was passed in 2012, and it defines what a private road is and states that we concede that a road owned by the State Highway and Transportation Commission is not a private road. But what I also start out with the proposition, and I call it the Carpenter Rule because that's one of the more succinct cases that states the rule, but it states that governmental entities are not subjected to statutes of general application unless they're specifically included or by necessary implication are included within the application of the statute of general application. It's my position that by exempting roads of the State Highway Commission from being a private road, because it is in essence a public road, it necessarily implies that other property of the State Highway Commission could be subjected to a way of necessity under the statute and under the Constitution, Article 1, Section 28. Article 1, Section 28 allows for rights of condemnation by private parties for private ways of necessity in the manner prescribed by law. And the General Assembly, in this statute, in section 228.341, has stated that state highway, the roads of the State Highway Commission are exempt. But if the intent was to exempt all of the State Highway Commission property, the legislature could have said nothing, because that we can see that was the law under the Carpenter Rule. But by exempting roads owned by the State Highway Commission, it necessarily implies that other property of the State Highway Commission could be subjected to a waive necessity if the other elements of the statute are.
And opposing counsel says, if I understand correctly, even if that's true, there's this other exception for subdivision roads and platted roads, and that's where the creek road is. And so in this case, the exception that if something is laid out as a subdivision platted road, that it's not subject to the rule of necessity that you're talking about.
Yes, Your Honor. The petition that's been filed by the appellant in this matter asks for a declaratory judgment on a provision of section 228.341, which I've referred to as the subdivision road exemption. It's our position that if the entire road cannot be described by reference to a subdivision plat or an indenture, it is not a subdivision road within that exemption. In this case, part of the road would be established anew, created anew by the court under 228.342, and we would tie that on to Creekstone, the Creekstone Road.
Thank you. When the Rabel Trust had its property condemned and it lost access to Route M, is there any evidence in the record that it was compensated for the fact that it would be landlocked property then?
Your Honor, we're on the at the pleading stage, and I would concede that the court has the right to take judicial notice of other proceedings, and could take judicial notice of the proceedings in the, I'm going to call it the 1996 condemnation case, because that's when the commissioner's report was recorded. Those records are on microfilm at the courthouse. I've been through them. I don't see anywhere in the record where Judge Stewart, on the record indicated that he took judicial notice of these other proceedings. But I can see that he could have, or if he wanted to.
You're saying this was judgment on the pleading, so right. We don't know this yet.
This was a motion to dismiss, Your Honor.
That was my point in my previous question, the pleading versus showing in a trial. This is a motion to dismiss case.
Yes, Your Honor. This is.
Any other questions? Thank you. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thanks.
Madam Chief Justice and honorable judges, I represent the Creekstone respondents in this case and the Niehaus family. And one of the points discussed was this idea that the legislature changed the statute for strict necessity to say no access. No access has always been equated to mean no state or public road running through or alongside property. Otherwise, you run into this odd situation where someone has a public road going right through the middle of their property, yet somehow they claim strict necessity and they're able to wiggle around and go over here.
Why did the legislature change the statute?
The legislature, for the main purpose, included in the statute, first of all, it was 250 words, section 340. It was just one long run-on sentence. But what the legislature did was to include the terms not only establish a private road, but widen a public road. And the legislature used the term no access as a shorthand for a road that goes alongside or through.
They're saying they have a road that goes alongside, but they have no access. So wasn't that deletion of the requirement that you show no road goes alongside? There's not many situations where that will make a difference, I grant you, but they say this is one.
Well, Your Honor, the no access language, and the courts of appeals have agreed on it for the last 25 years for consistency purposes, and the reason why is we have the word strict necessity in the statute. That's not defined either, and the courts have fleshed out what strict necessity means. So in this case, what you're talking about is applying the standard strictly, right? There are constitutional, foundational, bedrock principles of property ownership. And to allow a neighbor to sell off his access for $400,000 or $500,000 in a condemnation judgment and then claim, I have strict necessity, I've got to come through the subdivision of
homes. A person whose property is condemned is not voluntarily selling off their access.
That's right.
And isn't that a very significant difference in what you're arguing?
Your Honor, the condemnee could have filed exceptions, could have fought it, could have appealed it, could have said we want some access, because the solution to the problem here is the condemnation says it limits or prohibits access, that vague standard. The solution to the problem is for this developer to go to the Transportation Commission and say, I want this direct route. And we have just a map, just sort of a kind of a printout that shows who owns what property and maybe gives a eye view instead of a verbal view. And with Your Honor's permission, Mr. Ullum, pass that up.
You can have copies made and provide it to the court.
Thank you.
But aren't all these facts for development later as opposed to for a motion to dismiss?
Well, Your Honor, no, because the facts come from his petition. He states them in his petition. The developer goes through and says, okay, the Rabel condemnation back in 1995, 1996, took my access, we got paid $500,000, the predecessor was paid $500,000, now I'm landlocked and I have to go through this subdivision. And I agree with Your Honor, the subdivision exemption passed by the legislature in 2012 makes it clear that this is something strict necessity just doesn't apply. It's not meets and bounds, it's not maintenance orders. It says nothing in these sections shall apply.
Is it your position the law can just leave this land landlocked? And how does he get in and out now?
Well, this is, and Judge Stith, I understand your question. It's landlocked by being paid for.
I understand, it's being paid for. So the rule of necessity just doesn't apply.
It wouldn't apply, first of all, because of the subdivision here, the subdivision exemption. Second, it wouldn't apply.
So is he trespassing to go onto his land? I mean, how does he get to his land?
Well, I don't know how he gets to his land, but he's obviously gotten there because he scoped it out. But he can get to his land. He can certainly walk it from M because Highway M's right there next to it. The problem that you have is you have somebody that, when they got the access limited, and the developer had notice of this, and the developer knew this when they bought it. And I think, Your Honor, you had said, and I think it was Nixon versus Blue Springs, talked about like an inverse condemnation case. When you negotiate the price, the developer's negotiating for a lower price, he's on notice that there's some access limitation. And again, the condemnation does not say prohibit, it says limit or prohibit. And that seems the way to go, because you have these property rights that kind of butt into each other. And the courts have always said when you come down to strict necessity, it's construed strictly. It's construed very strictly here. And that's why the no access still means no road next to or through it. I'll give you an example, and I don't like the parade of horribles example, but today I turn around and I voluntarily sell my access rights. I go to the state commission, I say, I'm right up against Highway M, give me a couple $100,000, I'm not going to connect, I won't bother you. Tomorrow, I file a suit by way of strict necessity and say, I'm landlocked, I have no access. That's what happened here, but
what about Judge Breckenridge's point? I mean, you might have judicial estoppel there and you can't get a benefit and then take the opposite position. But if it's condemnation, you haven't sought to sell it. That's a different situation.
And they did not seek to sell it. But again, they had the right to file exceptions. They had a right to appeal. They had a right to fight.
But we don't know at this stage in the proceeding whether what happened and whether or not they were compensated for landlocked. Making their property landlocked, they weren't compensated. whether what efforts they made?
Well, we saw where the exceptions were withdrawn, and we saw over $480,000 were paid. That's something from the Rabel condemnation that I believe is in the record in this case, or certainly in the developer's petition.
Well, doesn't he say he had no right to the exceptions? You might, but there was a question. A counterclaim couldn't at that time be filed in a condemnation action, so he couldn't ask for access at that time. Is that relevant? Are these things that you may well win on, but we need to have a fuller record?
It's. I don't think you need a fuller record. I think the record's developed, Your Honor. Like I say, the circuit court, we don't know what ground that Judge Stewart decided to grant the motions to dismiss. So any of the grounds, I guess, are up for grabs, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. But when you have a situation where someone is landlocked, and to me, landlocked is always meant traditionally, in the common law before the statutes were passed in 1939 and continuing through. Landlocked means you have private property all around you to get to a road. It's never meant, I have this piece of property here, I'm right next to or adjacent to a state highway. That's never meant that. And that's why I think the no access is just a shorthand that has continued. Because again, we have to take strict necessity. We have to define that, courts define that. No access is just a shorthand way for saying a road runs alongside or through.
Can the appellant ever petition the highway department for to reverse the limited access?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, there's evidence, I don't know if you want to call it evidence in the petition, but the developer went and had some type of informal conversations with the commission and said, well, I take it as a denial, but there was no permit process ever gone through. And that's another problem here, is there's no exhaustion of administrative remedies. The developer could go, Judge.
Well, opposing counsel says because it's not a contested case, he doesn't have to do that. Is that correct?
That's what he says, but the permit process has always been there. If you are going to ask the state commission, I want to connect to your road, you have to go through a permit process. And that's not been done in this case. So what I'm saying is there are all these issues in the context of the purpose of the statute, and that it's strictly construed, it's a derogation of common law because you want to protect property owners.
Do we have to agree with you and that the Court of Appeals was correct in reading no significance into the change in the statute in order to find in your favor?
That's one of the grounds, yes, Your Honor, but also there are the other grounds. There's the statute of limitations ground, res judicata, exhaustion of remedies, and the subdivision exemption, which Your Honor mentioned earlier.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I have split my time with the commission, and I see my time is concluded. Please consider the arguments and affirm in all respects on behalf of the respondents, Creekstone and the Niehauses. Thank you. Thank
you. Good morning, Your Honors. It was a bit painful to hear a discussion about condemnation. That's been my life the last 40 years, and so I hope to clear things up. Yes, we paid $494,000 for 15 acres and limitation to the access to Highway M. The reason is the old Highway M faced the farm itself, the Rabel farm. And when we relocated the road and built a whole new M, limited access facility, four lanes, this was demanded by the people in Jefferson County. So
is
they
all
could
this
get
in the record, or is this something outside the record, since we're just on motion to dismiss based on the pleadings here?
Your Honor, it's been stipulated to by all the parties. I think if you read the plaintiff's stipulation of facts, we agreed with all this. But yes, because it was dismissed before the evidence was developed, if the court wants to send it back, yes, there's tons of things that could be brought to the court's attention that were not, and because of the dismissal. But the court seemed interested, and you in particular seemed interested on this, and so I thought I'd fill in some of the blanks. No, we don't ordinarily grant breaks in access. If we pay $500,000, and I understand, you know, all we have to do is bring in a certified copy of the award of commissioners. It spells it out. If we buy access and pay that much money for it, it would take a change in civilization for us to change our mind. In other words, people move away and it suddenly become a rural road.
As Judge Stith mentioned, it could be judicial estoppel if you paid $500,000 to give up your access, and then you come in the next day and say, no, I want my access, I think there's a very good argument you can't get it.
Yes, sir.
But we're not there. We're not there.
I understand we're not there.
I'm wondering, is it your position that you can condemn something so it's an involuntary taking of, you may have paid for no access, but they had no choice in that, and then you can leave them landlocked and they have no choice in that, they have no right to claim an easement of necessity?
Of course, Your Honor. We're substituting, as the law provides, a substituted rights. We're giving them cash for their rights.
But they have no choice in this, you're saying, and they can be involuntarily landlocked with no right to claim necessity.
Of course, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, and what's your cite for that?
I believe all three cases are cited in my brief, and they're in the first couple of paragraphs. But the whole fundamental of the interstate highway system is based on the premise that we can take the access of the individuals. The question of a right-of-way by necessity only comes into play in this case when you ask the question, can you ask for a right-of-way of necessity across private land? The Court of Appeals correctly ruled that because condemnation is unfavored by the common law, you have to strictly construe. And there is no authority given in the statute for a private condemnation across public land. And so that's our simple position. We've acquired the rights to Highway M, and we're not subject to a right-of-way of necessity because it's private land. Now, there's some talk about whether the difference between highway land and not highway land. We're forced by federal law to buy what's called uneconomic remnants. In other words, the pieces that are left over when you cut the cookie, the little dough that's on the outside. So, yes, we have partial interest in some of the lots, none of which abut Mr. Avery. So if he's going to try and condemn and claim that there's a difference between an uneconomic remnant and that which is occupied by the road, he's got to cross other property owners before he even gets to us. We believe the crux of the case is found in the statute. The statute doesn't authorize a private condemnation of public land. That's our case, and we really don't have any other interest at this point in time. Yes, we believe that if the evidence was developed, we must have a much stronger case. But at the trial stage, where the judge is looking at the pleadings don't stand up because the pleadings don't relate to a right that they have, which is a private condemnation of public land. So that's our case in a nutshell. We may take no position on some of the other claims. If you look at the plat we've developed and we gave to the Neese houses, and Judge Breckenridge invited us to send, you'll see that, in fact, Avery doesn't touch any land that's owned by the Highway Commission with the exception of Route M, for which we bought the access. Any other questions?
There appear not to be any.
Thank you, Judge.
May it please the Court. First, I'd like to address Mr. Hunt's comments. The words no access were added to Section 228.342 in 1991. There was a subsequent amendment in 1993 that allowed the widening of access, and this was to accommodate certain subdivision ordinances that require subdivision roads to be a certain width in order for that land to be utilized for a subdivision, a residential subdivision. And those two amendments came in at two different times. The words no access were added to the language of the statute in 1991 without this widening language. And it's at that point that I am saying that the law changed. With the amendment of that language and the repeal of the prior language, there is no longer any requirement of a showing that a public road goes through or does not go through or alongside the property for which access is being sought.
The argument I think you were making is that whether or not there is a public road would be relevant evidence as to whether or not they're accessed, but it's not a bar to seeking a right of necessity.
Correct, Your Honor. Strict necessity is still an element of an action under 228.342. It's a separate element in the statute. And so, for example, if the 50 acres already had an access road in the back 40 that allowed us to connect to Moss Hollow Road in some other direction, we would not have the strict necessity,
even though
our access to Highway M is been abrogated.
What about opposing counsel's argument that you can't prove strict necessity when you haven't tried to get the MHTC to agree to give you limited access to Highway M?
The case on point is the Moss Cemetery Springs case. It's cited in the brief. In that case, the trial court, there was a claim for a right of necessity, and the property adjoined State Highway Commission property. The trial court said, well, you have to go ask the Highway Commission for an access easement, and the Court of Appeals ruled that that's not correct, that the if there is no access, or if the elements of the statute are met, there's no requirement for exhaustion or anything of that nature. And that's the case I would cite.
Thank you.
I would also, my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.